We're glad to see everyone, and it's good to have a good number out today. And isn't it interesting how the sunshine can just add to the glory of a glorious day already? I've told you before about the preacher Asa Plyler, who was an old preacher back in Walker County, over around Jasper in the country out there. And for years he preached on the radio while we were living in that county. I would turn the radio on in the morning, and I would hear him as he would begin, and he had this very deep, booming voice, and he would say, this is the Lord's day, a wonderful day, and it didn't matter if it was raining or sunshining or whatever. Just hearing him say that, I've always remembered that, and that would charge me up, pick me up, and help me be determined that it's going to be a good Lord's day. But it is a good Lord's day, as every Lord's day is. I'm glad to have visitors today, but we're about to lose two, Harold and Jeanette, taking off today, I believe it is. And they're going to be gone a little while down in Florida. So Sandra and I got jealous. So we decided that we're going to make a flying trip down to see our grandson and our daughter and her husband. So we will fly down, Lord willing, tomorrow and come back Friday. And I'm looking forward to that very much. Today I want to talk with you about the relationship of husbands and wives. This relationship is the first human relationship that God provided for. It is important to remember, just as a matter of perspective, that the first relationship of all that God provided for with human beings was the relationship with Himself. So I think that fits. That relationship was established first, and it should always be first. But the first interhuman relationship that God established was the husband-wife relationship. And all other family relationships grow out of this one from the beginning. And from then on, every other human relationship, every other family human relationship grows out of this one. And as you know, the husband-wife relationship was planned by God and was begun in the Garden of Eden. Now, this relationship did not evolve. Well, I could say it did evolve, but it didn't evolve the way God wanted it to. The point I'm wanting you to make is that when God planned this relationship, and when He created this relationship in the Garden of Eden, it was exactly as He wanted it to be. It was not that later on He would have it to be exactly the way He wanted it to be. It was in the garden the way He wanted it to be. And everything that has come since has either been a departure from that, or has been some legislative means, some divine legislative means to cope with deviations from the original plan. So I think it's important that you realize that God did not do this and say, I'll patch this up later. I'll develop this relationship and make it what I want it to be later. No, just as the universe sprang forth made, and the earth sprang forth made, so the marriage relationship sprang forth from God's mind, and this was the way He wanted it to be. It's important for us to understand that and realize that. There are many factors that make it important for us to examine the Bible teaching on this relationship from time to time. One is that the Bible furnishes us completely unto every good work, and one of those is what we need to know about the marriage relationship. The need to know what the Bible teaches about how a husband and how a wife must discharge their role. Also, there is the need to counter the influences of a society that discounts the sanctity of marriage. And I don't have to tell you about that. All I do is point it out. You know as well as I do that our society growingly discounts the sanctity of marriage. And when we talk about the sanctity of marriage, that word sanctity, do you know what it is about marriage that makes us even able to use this word sanctity? It is because it is a relationship provided by God. And it is a relationship that must be maintained in connection with divine guidelines for it to be acceptable to Him. And it is a relationship that we form in His sight. Therefore, the sanctity of marriage, it is a divinely given thing. And there is also the need to see that marriage is not the union of two men or the union of two women, and that such relationships are an abomination to God. In Leviticus chapter 18 and verse 22, at the close of 21, God says, I am the Lord. Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination. And there is no other reason given for this. It is not connected with idolatry. There was the connection of fornication, ritual fornication with idolatry. And the ritual fornication, from what I've read, could involve heterosexual relationship or a heterosexual action. Or it sometimes, in some cases, especially, for example, in Corinth, at the temple of Aphrodite that was there, it might involve homosexual relationships as well. But the point God makes here is you shall not do this. Why? It is an abomination. End of story. That's it. That's why. It is an abomination. In chapter 20 and verse 13, and if a man lie with mankind as with womankind, both of them have committed abomination, they shall surely be put to death, their blood shall be upon them. Notice this was not a sin for which you bring a sin offering. This was a sin for which you die. And I think that is one of the ways to point out just how sacred this relationship is before God. And homosexual relationships are an abomination. The Bible is so clear on that point. It cannot be denied. So it is a good thing and a good time for us to consider this, because we're constantly being bombarded with all of these influences. Marriage must involve the whole person. There's so much superficiality and vanity about us today. Superficial. Relationships are superficial. You hear people interviewed on television, some travel documentary or just anything like that, and it is so obvious that there's so much superficiality. In one of the little travel documentaries Sandra and I watched, it was saying, here was this, the host, the lady was interviewing one of the men in one of the locations, and she was saying, What do you do after work? What do you do for fun? He said, I drink. Well, whoopee. Boy, if that's all I had to do for fun, I would feel like I lived in a desert. I drink. He said another thing or two that I won't get into. Superficiality and vanity. People today don't know what a relationship even is. Now, you know why I'm telling you that? I'm telling you that because you need to be careful that you don't get drawn into that. Marriage involves the whole person. And you cannot be superficial. And the idea of vanity. Now, in the Bible, vanity has different meanings from the one that we give it. Vanity in the Bible means that which is not substantial, that which cannot be depended upon, that which does not last. It's like the shifting sand. You can't build anything out of that. But we sometimes talk about vain as a person who is selfish and focused only upon self, self-centered. We use the word in that way. And the Bible likewise condemns that idea of vanity also. So we need to be aware of these tendencies. So that means that I need to strive not to be a superficial, vain person. And as I look around about me to form my very close friends and relationships, and especially my marriage, I need to be careful that the person that I am working with and dating and so on is not a superficial, vain person. And the world has plenty of them to offer. And if you're not careful, you will get that kind of person. And you know what else? You may already be married to that kind of a person. In an audience like this, I don't know what the circumstance is of everyone in this audience. Sometimes superficiality does not just leap out at you like that. Sometimes vanity does not leap out at you. Sometimes it does, but sometimes it doesn't. So what I want you to do today is, whether you're married or not, I want you to listen carefully to the things I'm going to say, and I want you to take them to heart. And so marriage must involve the whole person. So many people know only selfishness. It's what I want, number one, I'm number one, you know, that kind of thing. Selfishness. I'm the only one that matters. I don't care what you want. What I want is what matters. That kind of attitude is so prevalent. And in so many cases, the things that are important to us are often the most temporal and foolish things imaginable. This is characteristic of our society. And so often there is no fundamental understanding of what marriage is and what it involves. So these are all things we must be aware of. And if you're not married and you're looking ahead to the day you will be married, you need to understand that this is what is at work in our society, and we're going to have to deal with it. Now, those of us who are married, we need to be sure that we are not guilty of these attitudes. Well, we continue and we get deeper. There have never been two perfect people who got married. I hate to be the one to tell you. But there have never been two perfect people that got married. Now, where do you think I'm going to go with this? I'll give you a moment to contemplate what would be my next point. You know what this means? Here's what it means. Adjustments. Oh, you mean my adjusting my wife? No. No, I'm not talking about my adjusting my wife or adjusting my husband, whichever your case may be. I'm talking about adjusting me. You see? Now, I don't know what your reaction was there, but I'd like for you to think a moment about what your reaction was when I said adjustments. Did you tend to think, yeah, I'm going to need to adjust my husband. Yeah, I'm going to need to adjust my wife. Is that what you thought? Probably not. But if you did, then that sort of underscores the point I'm making. Marriage involves the whole person. And we can't be selfish in the matter or self-centered, or we're not going to have a good marriage. Adjustments. That's what it's going to call for. To fulfill any role ordained of God, The first thing one must be is a good person. Just a good person. How would you define good here? Well, of course, I think that when we marry, the thing we need to look for is we need to be sure we're marrying a Christian. But not just somebody who says he or she is a Christian. And the way you find out is you look for the commitment that one makes to spiritual things. And I can assure you, if you're looking at somebody or dealing with someone who really makes no commitment or very scant commitment to spiritual things, you can be assured that this person is not going to be the kind of Christian that you're going to want, and you're going to need to ask yourself this. If this person does not seem to know how to sustain a relationship with the God of heaven, how are they going to sustain a relationship with me? Now, that being said, a good person. What is a good person? A good person is somebody that's kind. They're likable. They're pretty easy to get along with. And they're not quick to fly off the handle. And they're kind of tolerant of your problems and tolerant of other people's problems, realizing their own imperfections. I think we know what a good person is, but sometimes maybe we don't. A considerate person. A good person. I want you to think about this. This good person here. This is the first goal to strive for. It is the first goal. Let me go ahead and make the next point. A man who will be an elder needs first to be a good man. So you don't start out saying, I'm going to be an elder. No, you start out saying, I'm going to be a good man. My goal is to be a good man. If being a good man helps me to become an elder, or if my being a good man helps me to be a good preacher or whatever, that's my goal. I want to be a good man. A husband needs to be a good man, and a wife needs to be a good woman. And you need to get that done before you ever get married. You need to get that done before you ever get married. You need to be a good person. This is at the heart of your relationship with God. And you see, that relationship with God comes first. That's the first one. We've got to have that one, what it ought to be. So I need to labor to be a good person. You and I, we need to labor to be good persons, just good people. That should be fundamental in any relationship that we seek or that we find ourselves involved in. I cannot overemphasize the importance of this. When marriages are not working, somebody is not being a good person. That is the way it is. And there is no exception. And maybe one is not being a good person. Oh, you can be good in some ways, but you're not a person good in the sense of a balanced approach. I'm talking about a good person. If a marriage is in trouble, then one or both have forgotten to labor on being good people. And in every marriage where there's trouble, that's at the root of it. So you need to understand that. When you say, my marriage is in trouble, then you may be saying, I am in trouble spiritually. I am in trouble morally. It may be my spouse is in trouble spiritually. My spouse is in trouble. Somebody's in trouble. If your marriage is in trouble, somebody is in trouble. That is absolutely true. And there is no solution. No solution to marriage problems except to deal with the people who make up that marriage. There just isn't any other way to do it. Often, people get married because they are in lust when they should be in love. You'll read about people and they met each other and that afternoon they had fallen in love. I think they have the word wrong. I don't know. I'm not going to say for sure. I'm really not going to say that because I think that it is possible you could meet a person and find yourself so compatible and everything. I think that some of us may have almost done that. Even though it took a while to work the details out. But nevertheless, so much of what goes on today, I feel safe in saying that, so much of what goes on in the world today called falling in love is falling in lust. It is a physical thing, a physical attraction, and the idea is we'll try it for a while. If it doesn't work, we'll try another. Like trading cars or whatever. What's the difference? We know the difference, but still, what is the difference? One of the differences between lust and love is that lust will not motivate people to do what is necessary to make a marriage succeed, but love will. And when the physical desire that may have just been burning like a flame, even an inordinate thing, drew you together, and then it's over. And the marriage is over. The relationship is over because that was all there was to it. That's not going to hold a marriage together. No way. Will not hold a marriage together. So I think it's important to notice the difference. Lust will not motivate people to do what is necessary to make a marriage work. I'll tell you what else. Lust will not move you to sit by the bed of a loved one and take care of that loved one's every need for days and days and days. And to be there when the last breath is breathed. Lust won't do that. Love will. There's a tremendous, tremendous difference. Now, these adjustments that I'm talking about are the things that must be adapted to make a marriage work. These adaptations. Remember, we started out, no two perfect people ever married. Therefore, adjustments. Now, what are the adjustments? Some of these adjustments are connected with the development of Christian character itself. Not just the development of good marriage. These are some things, some of these adjustments sometimes are things that should have been taken care of in the development of your own personality and character in being a Christian. They should have been taken care of, but they weren't. And so here we are in a marriage relationship without those things having been done, without those things having been taken care of. Now, we're having trouble. Why are we having trouble? Because we have not completed the development of the Christian character we need to have. And I'll tell you something else. If you are seriously lacking in the development of one of the areas of Christian character and personality, if you haven't had trouble yet, you will. How's that for good news? But it's not necessary. It is not necessary. In fact, it is deplorable if it happens, because what we should be doing is doing the growing and the transforming that God says we must do in order to imitate Him and to follow in the steps of Jesus. We're supposed to become replicas of Christ. That's what we're supposed to do. And as I do that, my marriage will improve. As you do that, your marriage will improve. And as two people married do that, their marriage will improve. And it'll fix everything. It will gradually do it. If you work on that character, the adjustments are the things that must be adapted to make a marriage work. If your marriage fails because of character defects, because of unacceptable personality traits, then it is not just your marriage that has failed. It is your personality and character that have failed. You have failed as a Christian. Now at this point, it's not the time to say, "Oh, woe is me, I give up." No, that's not at all the point. The idea is, so realizing that, what do I need to do? I need to get busy. I need to examine my motives. I need to examine my life. I need to examine what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to do with my death? You're going to die your death. And when you die your death, you will meet your Maker. Remember, it's so easy to go day after day now, especially when you're young, forgetting that. But even if you're young, it will come. It will come. And it may take a long time in some ways, but then in other ways, the nearer you get, the shorter the time will seem that it's been. But you will do it. Therefore, let us work to grow and to become what God would have us to be. You see, what it means is you haven't transformed. If you're having the trouble, you or your wife, you or your husband, or both of you, somewhere along the way, you haven't transformed. You haven't grown. You haven't become what God would have each of you and both of you to be. And so you need to examine your whole life and your commitment to God. And one of the things that I would most strongly recommend for any couple having trouble is that instead of saying, "We really need to look at our marriage," no, you need to look at yourselves. You need to look at yourselves. And each one of you needs to look very deeply into your heart and your mind and your soul and ask yourself, what are my priorities? What am I trying to do? Am I trying to win a contest? Or am I trying to go to heaven? In so many things, if we can labor to say, "I am trying to go to heaven. That's my goal. That's what I'm after." Then everything falls into place if we keep that goal first. It's just like we said at the beginning. The first relationship was the one with God. That's the one we have to work on. And if we work on that one and let that relationship filter down into our lives by transforming us to be what we ought to be, it will also help the marriage. Now, in our study tonight, I'm going to look at examples of adjustments and talk about those examples and how they need to be done. And we will continue discussing this matter. Husbands and wives. So I hope you can be here for that. I would like to remind all of you that the lessons are recorded, and they are recorded digitally and are posted on the website so that you can go to the website and listen to these lessons. But also remember, you can tell others about these and tell them how to go and access this information. And this is one of the ways that we can seek to evangelize and teach and work with people. So let's be aware of it, and let's also tell other people about that as well. So as we come to the close of this service where we have worshiped God, we have praised Him, we have honored Him by studying His Word and showing that His thoughts are the thoughts that we must contemplate. They are the thoughts that we must follow in our lives. as we come to this point, we appeal to those who are not Christians to think about your situation. And you may be a good person in many, many ways. You may be a good person in most ways. But when it comes to your salvation, here's the thing. Do you know how good you're going to have to be to get to heaven without Christ? You're going to have to be absolutely without sin ever. No evil thought ever. No inappropriate word ever. No wrong deed ever. And who can do that? Only one has done that. And that is the Son of God, who was God Himself. He was divine. So you need salvation. We all need salvation, and salvation has been brought down. Our God has provided us with that salvation which we could not have of ourselves. And He calls upon us to believe that He has done this, that Jesus is His Son. He calls upon us to turn away from sin, to renounce sin, to confess our faith, and to be baptized. These are the simple conditions that by meeting we can be the children of God. Sublime opportunity for seemingly ordinary things to be done to receive such a blessing. But it is yours, and it is offered to you. It can be yours. And we plead with you to give thought to this. And if you're willing to become a Christian today and it is your desire to do so, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.